Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is brought to you by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in new ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 220 of the podcast with Carson Ellis, author-illustrator of Home, one of my absolute favorite picture books of the year. Carson is a salt-of-the-earth kind of person, seeming always in tune with the materials she's using to create the beautiful art we all enjoy. Her muddied palette roots her art in the real world, even when we're looking at something fantastical. It's a quality that I attribute to why many readers find themselves staring and staring at the spreads in Home. There's something so familiar and yet so whimsical about that story, as if the book itself is a metaphor for the content it's using to connect with readers. And when you get to know the person behind the book, as you're about to, I think you're going to understand why there is no better person than Carson to be sharing this story with us. Enjoy the listen. Here's episode number 220 of the podcast with Carson Ellis. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Carson Ellis. I am giddy to be talking to you tonight.
Oh, thank you.
Carson, I've in such a wonderful roundabout way, I get to talk to you because of my connection with Steve Malk and because of your connection with him. But you have been around our house and your art has been around our house for a very long time. So I'm just really thankful to get to talk to the voice behind that art, because my word, you make beautiful things.
Oh, that's sweet of you. Thanks for saying so.
Of course. And you've got the new book this year, Home, is perfect. I mean, I'm sure you're hearing this from everyone. Everyone just sort of going gaga over it. But it's so beautiful, Carson, and it's such a quiet book, and the illustration you've done with it speaks to children in such a beautiful way. It's just wonderful.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, come on. It's amazing. Everyone listening is like nodding feverishly, because it just is this sort of thing that you don't often get these books that come across. They do come, but you don't often get these books where you just sort of want to rip out all the pages and frame them. And this is kind of that book.
Well, it was very, very fun to draw. I loved making it. And it was also a really long time coming. You know, I've been illustrating books for a long time. 10 years, 12 years, something like that, and have wanted to write and illustrate a book since I was a kid. I mean, that's sort of been the goal since I was a child myself. So it feels like pretty monumental to me in my own life and, you know, my personal life that it happened. And the fact that people also like it is pretty thrilling.
It is thrilling. And congratulations, because it's quite a debut. And I think that I've talked to artists too that have been in that similar situation, that they've illustrated other people's work, but the chance to tell your own story and show your voice when you have the opportunity to tell the story is different. And I think that this is such a beautiful, intimate way for us to know you. I mean, we were talking about this
outside of recording, and Steve and I were talking about this, but I know your art from the Decemberists because of your husband, and because the art is beautiful. And I worked for years in a record store when those were still things. And I was there when the Decemberists started becoming a thing. And that was such an exciting thing that I tie that to my time in the record store, that was sort of the time when the Decemberists were becoming a thing. And then all these years later to be in the library now and to see that same art looking back out at me and knowing this is the same person behind it. It's just, it feels like you're part of my story too. And I think that that's sort of the power that your art has in connecting that way, in that way that it's so personal that way.
Thank you. That's nice of you to say. Well, we definitely have Steve Malk to thank for, you know, linking those two things, seeing those album covers and seeing that what I really was probably not an album artist as much as a children's book illustrator who was being waiting to be told that she was a children's book illustrator.
Can I pry a little bit to ask how that was? I know that Steve is friends with lots and lots of musicians. And I know that from talking to him that he's got this great talent for just sort of saying, you're really good at this thing. Did you ever consider applying it to writing for children? And then sometimes people like you say yes. But is it that simple?
Yeah, it is that simple.
Oh my word, I love that it's that simple.
Well, I think it's that simple because a lot of the time when he suggests that to a person, the person is like, yeah, of course, I've been thinking of that my whole life, but I got into animation, or I became a guy in a band, or I, you know, became a fine artist, or I'm an editorial illustrator. But really, this is the thing that kind of speaks to me. I think so many of the people that he works with, you know, like Christian and John Clausen and Jen Karachi, Nikki McClure, they're all people that were sort of doing really wonderful things in these spheres outside of the kids' book world, but certainly with kind of an eye to kids' books and with a knowledge about them that made them good candidates for that transition. And yeah, it is that simple. I mean, that is how Steve approached me, sort of out of the blue. At the time, though, I was working on a kids' book, but I was working on a kid's book for an editor who had approached me and suggested that I work on a kid's book for her, an idea, kind of pro bono. She wanted me to pitch this idea to her, and then she said she would try to pitch it, you know, to her people and get the book made. And then, so I had been kind of informally working on this thing, though taking it very seriously because I was so excited about the prospect of making a picture book. And then this editor sort of disappeared, and I was having a hard time getting in touch with her. And I was like, look at all this work I've done. Where are you? You know? And then Steve came along in the midst of that and said, have you thought about working on kids' books? I'm a literary agent who works with kids' book illustrators, and I think you'd be great at it. And I was weirdly leery because I didn't really know how the whole thing worked. So I was sort of like, well, I'm kind of doing just fine on my own, which wasn't true, but I thought it was true. And so I explained the situation with this editor, and he said, well, I know that editor. I mean, do you want an advance for that book that you're working on that you can't get in touch with her about and that you haven't been paid for? And I was like, is that a thing you can do? And he was like, that's what I do. And I was like, yes, I would like an advance. So that was the first thing he did, was he got me a contract for this book that I was working on, which actually ended up falling through and never getting made. But it started off a long and fruitful and terrific relationship with him. Yeah, and that's sort of how it happened. But I didn't think I needed an agent. I didn't know how the whole thing worked. You know, I didn't actually even go to school for illustration. I went to school at the University of Montana for painting. So I graduated from college without knowing how to be an illustrator or what those different, you know, how an avenue to editorial illustration would differ from an avenue to kids' book illustration. I didn't know what a literary agent did. So I was really just kind of feeling my way through it all, faking it until I made it kind of thing. And Steve came along and saved me from myself. Thank God. But yeah, I feel like he's done that for a lot of people I knew. Not saved them from themselves. I mean, a lot of people were really happy doing what they were doing, but he saw that they, that what they were doing would translate so well into kids' books. And so he brings all of this sort of outside perspective into the kids' book publishing world, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, I think that he has a great sense, too, for how that voice can lend itself to children, because when you pull in a voice that that is, you know, uniquely suited for perhaps doing other things, and then turn it to writing for children, then you get something new and something really beautiful. And that, I know it's been a road to get to here, but Carson, that's what home is all about. I mean, I love, as I said, that you directly talk to your audience in this book and allow them to explore the concept with you and to wonder with you. And one of my favorite moments in home is when you don't give an answer, when you just ask the reader, well, who do you think lives here? And then you leave it.
Yeah, that's actually my favorite moment in the book too. It's definitely the best moment in the book when you're reading it aloud to a kid, you know, because it's the moment where they're really, if they're not engaged before that, they're at least forced to wonder, and you can make them answer the question.
Yeah,
I like that about it too. I was worried that I would make a book. My concern as an illustrator and as a person who took so many stabs at writing picture books over the past however many years and never really had an idea that I liked, but my solution to that eventually was just to start with something that I like to draw, which is homes and architecture and environments and stuff, and then to build a story around that. So my concern with the book was always that I didn't want it to just look like an art book, you know, because I knew that I was going to pore over these illustrations. I knew I would be so excited to illustrate this book that that I could make good illustrations for it because I would be inspired. But then I don't think that's enough to make a good picture book. You know, I think there's a lot of books in the world where the illustrations are amazing, but the writing's not quite there. Or there's books in the world where the writing is perfect, but the illustrations don't speak to me, you know? And I didn't want to do the former, the thing where the art is good and the concept was lame.
Thank you in advance.
And so I thought one of the ways to do that was just to really make sure that it was a book that spoke directly to kids, the kids
right.
that were reading it.
How does one manage that if you're approaching homes? I guess you had mentioned that you had this interest in writing children's books for a while, but do you also, can I perhaps assume that you're a person that just likes spending time with children, with young people, and having conversations like that?
Yeah. You can totally assume that. I do love kids, and I love especially my own kids, and I get a pretty good sense from them what is boring and what isn't. So they have radically different taste in literature. One of them is 2.5 and the other is 9.5. So
one probably thinks literature tastes better than the other.
Yeah.
And maybe one has better taste in literature.
Actually, they're both above eating books.
Well, thank you.
We're past that phase with both of them. And they both love books, but obviously totally different.
I kind of secretly love the idea that, well, my 9-year-old still nibbles a little bit. But...
Yeah. Actually, my 9-year-old does too. He does that thing where he'll like tear a tiny little piece out of a book and like nibble on it, which I used to do when I was his age too. Now I'm horrified by it, but I kind of remember doing that. You'd be like lost in a book and you would be actually eating the book while you were reading.
Yeah, but mom, you're also making books with, or this book in particular is made with like the best paper to be eating. Candlewick has the such fantastic production on their books. John Hsu, so famously, and I love doing this as well, but whenever he visits schools, I don't know, have you met John yet?
No, but I know who he is.
John's a wonderful guy. When he speaks to audiences, he talks about how when he is with students, And they make a great production out of unboxing a book, and crowding around it. And the first thing that you do is that you look under the jacket, you take the jacket off and you lay it aside and see sometimes that there's special art underneath that jacket. But then the second thing you do is that you open up the book and you bury your nose in it. And yeah. Candlewick is like the perfect company for burying your nose in a book. Their paper quality or their glue or something is just, it smells like, not in the same way, but it's like getting a smell of like freshly baked bread. It just is mm-hmm. something that's special.
Yeah, they're a very classy publisher. I I loved the way my book came out. And I feel like they did a better job publishing it than I expected or needed them to do. You know, like it was the first time in my life where I was sent proofs and I said, these look fine. And our director was like, not quite yet. And I was like, really? What else needs to happen with these? She was like, more needs to happen. They need to get better. Like they really, it was a pretty wonderful and eye-opening experience. But yeah, what are we talking about?
I'm sorry. We were talking, we got to the point of your children and your children reading and their taste in books. And then I so silly distracted us about eating them. But you did actually mention, though, I do want to point out, because I do love this, that you raised a reader that ended up having sort of the same habits that you did, ripping off little corners of pages and tasting them that way.
Uh-huh. Which is very strange. I don't know what that's just our weird genes that probably we have like oral fixations. But back to the original question, which I think was, like, why am I immersing myself in this world of children and childlike things?
And writing to children and talking to children, exactly.
Yeah, I love children. I'm also kind of a grown child, you know, a kid's book illustrator, married to a musician. I'm maybe kind of a, like, case of arrested development. You know, all I want to do is sort of sit and stare out my window and draw all day. So I feel pretty in tune with myself as a child. I don't feel, in some ways I feel very evolved from the 5-year-old me, and other ways I feel like at its core, that's kind of still who I am and how I'm rolling. So that helps. It helps for making books for kids. But yeah, I love spending time with kids. I have really interesting book events because if I do them at night in bookstores, it tends to be mostly grown-ups that come to, at least for the book events for home, but mm-hmm. often for the Wildwood ones too. It would be mostly grown-ups, and it would be people that wanted to talk about illustration, which, awesome, you know, those are my people. But then I would go to schools, and it would be like 200 wild kids, and also awesome. Also my people. So it feels like, I feel like I have the right audience. It feels good.
I think you definitely have the right audience. If you're engaging both parents, adults, and children, and I have to imagine that you've got a legion of adults that love your books, that just work with children, but don't have any of their own, or just like the way that you're doing art and storytelling in your books, because these are books that are sort of meant to appeal to everyone. I sort of link you, whether I don't know if you'll enjoy this or not, but I do link you often with the type of parent that I suppose I am too, like the Wes Anderson type of parent, just that group of people that sort of feel that they are quirky and interested in the world and liking the way things look, but maybe not being able to articulate it, just that looks right and that feels right. And that's sort of what I've always loved about your art, that it just is something about it, that the placement of everything, the way everything is interacting, just sort of feels right.
Oh, well, that's very nice. I'll take it.
Hey, I need to go back to something. Before we were talking about eating paper and children and wonderful things like that. Mm-hmm. We were talking about, where you turned in your book to ask the reader, whose home is this? And what about this? Mm-hmm. Right? And how you sort of really loved those spreads, and as do I. And that is sort of where children get engaged. If not quite yet up to that point. That's where you win the whole audience. But as I've read this book, and it's been out just about the entire year, we've got to spend a great amount of time with this book. I've loved that early on we're talking about where you can live. And you talk about being on boats or in wigwams or in palaces or underground lairs or shoes. Mm-hmm. And all of the children around the house, the giant shoe house where the old maid lives, but on the roof, the children have noticed, and now I cannot unsee it, that on the roof of this house is a boy, and you can see his tushy.
Oh my God, I can't believe you said tushy. That's what I say too.
This is how we say it. This is what we do in school. I work with young children, but that to me, Carson, that is the moment. I just wanted to share with you, because I'm sure you get these moments when you then read in front of groups of children, but mm-hmm. that is always the moment when my students and my son now too has leaned in. And once they notice that, they are studying every detail of your, but inevitably they must be studying, even if we're not talking about it, they must be looking for tushies. But
what else might I be missing?
Are there any more? That's right. And there are actually a lot of little things to notice as you continue through, which is just, I mean, I watched that beautiful video that was made with you talking about home, that, like, I would call it a book trailer, the book trailer you made, mm-hmm. Where we get to see inside your studio and just hear a little bit about it. And you say this line that I'm sure inevitably get wrong, but it's something that sticks with me and that I talk about you to other people that I, when I'm talking excitedly about your art, which is that you said you're writing for children. And so you just, and you're painting for children and creating for children. So you just keep adding details and layers. Mm-hmm. And I like that, because who wouldn't want to keep studying the layers and keep looking more and more closely and discovering new things with each read? It's good to be able to get to come back to books, and it's good to be able to notice new things and anticipate getting to those pages with the tushies or with the the people from Valhalla, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's good to be able to look forward to those things. I personally, one of my favorite things to look forward to when I read home is that I love saying the word Moonians. That's like my favorite moment of the So I like that, not to overthink this beautiful book, but not to undersell it, that home has continued to be a gift to me the many, many, many times that I've read it aloud to many different children and to my own over and over. I really can't thank you enough for doing exactly what you did to make this book as special as it is.
That is so sweet. You're welcome a million times over. It was really my pleasure. I loved working on that book so much. And yeah, all the details, I think that's something that I love in books, because parents have to keep coming back to books over and over again too. Yeah. So I feel like that if the illustrations do have enough detail in them, if they have enough little things to kind of pick out and wonder about, enough little clues in the illustrations to sort of link them together, then you can keep going back to them and finding more in them. And I think it's interesting too, my kids, like I said, they're really different readers and very different ages, but I see the books that they both get into, and there aren't that many, but there are some. For example, have you seen those Momoko books?
I love those Momoko books. Yes.
We love them too. We have three of them, and both of my kids love them. Because of that, there's just, they never stop finding things in them. It's as appropriate for a 9-year-old as it is for a 2-year-old to just pore over those illustrations and try to mm-hmm. follow all these various different storylines. And
the one we have is in the Time of Dragons, in the Age of Dragons. It's called something along those lines.
Oh, we don't have that one.
But every time we read it, it's my son. I'm sure with the ones that you have, every time you read it, you sort of claim, I'm going to follow this character when we read it. I'm going to follow mm-hmm. that one. Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. My 2-year-old was reading it in the car on the way to school this morning, and he said, I'm going to follow the zebra. It's so cute. It's so cute. And so I think, and a lot of those, you know, those like, little golden books from the mid-century, Tibor Gurgley. Is that how you say his name?
Tibor Gurgley. I don't
you know
I've
him?
Ever, I,
a lot of books
me. Yeah.
that you have read and seen were illustrated by him. Like Busy Day, Busy People. A lot of those little golden books that are about, you know, there's one that you've probably seen a million times about firemen. They're from like the 40s.
Yeah.
You'd
I probably
know
still
work,
have
I
some.
Think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The books that my mom and dad had as a child were passed on to me and was read to me. They're sort of falling apart. But as I look behind me, I'm sitting in my library and I just have, there they all are shining back out. But yeah, mm-hmm. ones that you're right, that you just sort of.
Oh, like he did Scuffy the Tugboat.
And Scuffy.
You know that one?
Yes.
So, but I think one of the things that he did that was so brilliant was that he would have these panoramic landscapes, you know, where you would see Scuffy sailing along a river, but there would be so much going on either side of that river. You know, you'd see a guy chopping wood and there would be kids waving to him on a hill and deer running by. And so there's so much going on in that illustration. There's the story and then there's all the subplots, the uh-huh. sub-stories that are kind of up to the imagination of the kid that's reading them. And I think that's really special and neat and a thing that picture books can do that other things can't. And so other books can't. And so I just want to take advantage of it as much as I can.
Scuffy was the book that my dad read to me every single morning. And Carson, I must have been very young because I don't remember him actually reading it, but I can remember our old kitchen that we moved out of when I think I was like preschool, four mm-hmm. or something. And I still have my copy and I can still, when I leaf through it now, remember the spreads, even though I couldn't really remember the story from childhood. I remember it now because I've shared it with my son and I've talked about it before. That's the book that my mom tells me mm-hmm. I requested all the time, that my dad had this bond with me over this book. So when you say that, that makes me feel like, well, there's probably something deeply ingrained in me and in other people that have grown up reading those, probably much like you.
Yeah.
That, there was a sort of a sensibility about the illustrations that just stuck.
Yeah, it definitely stuck with me. I'm always thinking about those because not only do I have them in my studio and I look at them and I really admire kind of that whole era of picture book illustration, but I see my kids read them all the time. Mm. And especially, you know, a 2-year-old is just, there's the story and it's about a tugboat and he goes on an adventure and that's interesting. But then there's all of these other stories too. Yeah, I think that's neat. I want to try to take advantage of that more in picture books.
So are you, I'm sure you are, but are you working toward deadlines now for more books that you have both authored and illustrated?
Oh my God. Yes. I'm finishing like tomorrow. I'm finishing a book that
wow.
I've been working on for so long.
Congratulations. Oh my
Thank
goodness.
You. I know. I'm so excited to be
can
done with it. I've been working on
it
forever. Yeah, I think I can. I wonder what
Even if vaguely?
Yeah, I'll talk about it vaguely. I mean, I just spoke about it at Wordstock, that book festival over the weekend.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably fine, but it's basically, I don't know how to describe it in a way that won't make it sound unpleasant to read because it's pretty long for a picture book. It's wordless and except it does have dialogue, but the dialogue is in gibberish because the characters are all bugs. So, I think it's great.
You know,
and I think it
bugs
works.
Speak in gibberish.
They do. Well, they don't speak English. Not that I've been able to tell. So it was really part of the reason why it took so long is that unlike Home, there's a narrative that needs to be gotten across. There's a story. It's kind of about a plant that's growing and this world that revolves around it. And the world is populated by bugs and other sort of creepy, crawly, small things. But because there's no text and there's no discernible language, it was really complicated and difficult to figure out how to tell the story. I had at my disposal basically like teeny tiny bug body gestures And the fact that the language repeats in ways that I feel like maybe it's actually translatable in a way. My older son was able to translate it. He was sort of my tester, but he's older than probably the average reader of this book because it is a picture book. So I don't know. That's it.
That's enough. I feel like you've said oh my word. I'm sorry. If I'm not talking, it's because I'm just like picturing this amazingness. Can you share it? Good. Do you have a title? Can you share a title?
It's a title, but it's in bug language. So, but I can translate it for you. It's called Do Is Talk. It's D-U-I-Z-T-A-K. And it means what is that in bug language?
Do is talk. What is that?
What is that?
Oh my gosh, Carson, this is amazing. Who's publishing it?
It's Candlewick, and it's again, the same Liz Bicknell, the same person who edited Poem. Is my editor. Yeah, I'm so excited that I'm almost done. It's been a headache because I just had the idea, and I really liked the idea, and I wanted to make it work, but it was very hard to figure out how to make the story come across. And so I revised the dummy for it 8 times or something. I had a lot of feedback from friends, maybe too much. You know, I just kept getting really confused and losing perspective. And then I would bring another person into my group of people that was reading it and giving me feedback. And then I had too much feedback and I was very confused pretty much the whole time I was working on this book. But
sounds like it was a lot of fun to write this one.
Yeah, it was really fun. If by fun you mean grueling and confusing.
Oh, the bloodshed over writing a picture book.
I know. I mean, Home was so easy to write. It was the most kind of fluid process.
So you had this coming. This was coming to you.
I did have it coming to me. It's just a vlog. But I'm making it sound terrible. Now it's done and I'm proud of it. Yeah. I think I hated working on it, but I think that I like the book a lot. And I'm hoping that people will like it too. And like we were talking about in Like With Home, there are tons of little details and tons of little kind of sub-stories to follow and try to decipher.
Goodness. And all I can think too is the children that you'll be talking to and to have that voice saying, however you end up wording it in front of them, that this was really hard to write. And there were moments when I wanted to turn around, but I knew that there was a story there that was important to tell. Those kind of things are so important to get in front of children who are writing and who struggle and who want to walk away.
Yeah, I know. It's funny how much kids struggle, you know, with art and writing and how much they doubt themselves. It's crazy how early we start wondering if we're good at that stuff, you know, and if we can live up to our own expectations creatively and stuff. It always breaks my heart when kids are struggling with confidence in their own creative endeavors. I'm like, you can do anything. You're 8.
Yeah. No, really. Believe me. I think your stuff is amazing.
And it always is amazing.
It is.
Yeah.
They labor over it a lot. Man. It's been amazing to talk to you, Carson. Our time has flown. It's done. My goodness. But you have caused me to be even more excited for all that's to come. I'm so glad that you've got more stuff coming out for kids to see. But I'm also really, really glad that we got to spend time with Home. And I continue to be glad to get to spend more time with it. So as books have a tendency to resonate for years and years with them and continue to meet new readers for years and years, I wish you all the best for that. And I hope that every once in a while, some of those great feelings and words from these children come back to you, whether it's through school visits or if they happen to write you or things like that, or just, I don't know, be at a book festival or be in your neighborhood and be like, hey, that's Carson Ellis. I need to go give her a hug because she drew tushies and a shoe house.
It's so funny that you keep saying that because I got a whole, you know, big manila envelope full of letters from kids at a school I had visited kind of recently. And it was every single card was my favorite part was the tushy.
Yes, I love it. Way to go, children.
I know.
Keep it going. Keep reminding Carson what you love.
Yeah, thank you.
Before I let you go, I have a question that I ask all of my guests, if you don't mind. That is, I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit dream team kickball tournament, and Carson Ellis, I would love to know what one person, alive or past, from the kid-lit world you would want on your team and why.
Well, I thought about this, and I think Tommy Unger.
Yes.
Because he's a hero of mine, for one thing, and also because I was thinking, I don't really like kickball that much, or sports in general. I'm kind of lazy. And I was thinking maybe he would be like, you know, I'm 80. We don't need to play kickball. Maybe we could go, like, get a beer and draw in our sketchbooks or something.
Let me quantify everything by my age. Also, I'm Tommy Unger. That's amazing. It's fun that you bring up that name, too, because that connection makes a lot of sense, also seeing your art. I feel like you're kindred spirits in a way, through your art you are.
Yeah, I'm such a big fan of his.
That's great. Well, thank you once again for all that you're doing for children's literature, and to have that art looking back out at you, from chapter books to picture books, just everything that you're doing is wonderful. You are such a gift to children's publishing and to telling these stories. Thank you for that, Carson.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for talking. That was fun.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton and The Best Book Ever This Week. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. Next up on Let's Get Busy, Penny Parker Klosterman talks about There Was an Old Dragon Who Swallowed a Knight. And later in the week, Kristen Kitcher talks about The Tiara on the Terrace, the sequel to The Wig in the Window. See you then, and thanks for listening.
We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.